Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber Podcast. My name is Tony Groves, and today we are talking back on housing, but we're talking from the personal perspective. Actually, Martin, when we decided to do this podcast, you said this is of interest to you because, you know, you're of a certain vintage and,
Oh, well, I'm that old trope. I'm the middle-aged white man going to get divorced. Middle-aged white man going to get divorced and is going to need somewhere to live, you know. So yes, that's it figures with me. Yeah, definitely.
I'm reminded of the Randy Newman song. He's dead, but he doesn't know it. There's an element of that about you, Martin. But
no. Thanks, Tony. You're such a friend. You really are.
Look, we are joined by two brilliant guests, and we're delighted. This friend of the pod, activist, and one of the last people I probably had a pint with. when you think about it, Mary Coogan is on. Mary, thanks for joining us.
Oh, thanks very much for having me on.
No, it was. You know, look, we've had this discussion, you know, kind of outside of the podcast realm, so we might as well have it on air. And we are also joined by actor and writer, and also I'd say probably a bit of an activist in his own way, Mark O'Halloran. Mark, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us.
Thank you for having me.
I appreciate it, because Mark, you I'm gonna go straight to Mary, actually, if you don't mind. Mary, do you want to just give the listeners an idea of your own personal living situation and why you have found the ladder hasn't just been pulled up, it's been pulled up and the door above was closed?
Yeah, sure. So I was renting in Dublin for many years, and had, I guess, a bit of a, as with many people, you know, a bit of a hard time with housing. Was unemployed for a couple of years during the crash. And then when I did get back into work, it was all contract work. So, you know, renting was the only option there. So I rented for a number of years, was evicted twice, once in early 2018 and then again in 2019, which was great fun. And then decided at the start of this year that I would move back home and with a view to finishing the saving I'd started towards a deposit. Because it was really only in the last kind of 2 years that I felt like I had got to a point in my career and with my salary that I could kind of entertain the idea of getting a mortgage, even though I'd been keeping up with very high Dublin rents for years. So age 40, I moved back in with my parents in January. And to say I'm very lucky to be able to do that. It's not an option for a lot of people. So I'm very grateful that it's been able to work out that way to support me to save. But there are challenges of living at home when you're 40, about to be 41. Probably not where I thought I would see myself. At this point in life, but there you go, it's how things panned out. And yeah, so I got mortgage approval, and that you know, and that's the thing, that feels like the big obstacle, and it is an obstacle. You have to jump through a lot of hoops, you have to go through a lot to actually get a mortgage. And I'd done a lot of planning and prep and research, and you know, to make sure I was in the best place position to actually get a mortgage. And I got it, and I had my savings, and so I saved the deposit on my own. Which is a significant undertaking.
This is huge in terms of people don't understand that, like, because mortgage based on, you know, how long you're going to be left in work, what's the multiple on your income, or what's the, you know, debt to service ratio, all of that, all of those things. This is not a simple, all the hoops you've just gone through right now, most people fall several hurdles back, but go on, sorry.
Absolutely. No, it's a huge process. And I was lucky that I got some really solid advice from a friend about 2 years ago who was like, look, you know, just save X amount every month and just be really predictable. And, you know, just advice that then my broker gave me when I ended up going to a broker at the end of last year. So yeah, saving a deposit is significant. And I don't think it's talked about enough how many people get help with that process because they simply just cannot save. I was lucky enough that I was on a good income that enabled me to pay rent and save, and that I've been in this position to be able to move home. But I wasn't in a position to get a gift, as they say, from anywhere. And just how many people have to do that, because it's the only way they can possibly get a deposit, especially if you're paying rent in Dublin. Anyway, so I got mortgage approval, which felt like, you know, the big hurrah. And then I started looking at houses and was like, oh, there's very, very little in my budget. Top of my budget is 225. I'm buying on my own, so I don't have a combined income. And anything, the very few properties that are in that budget in Dublin are selling for 30, 40, 50,000 over because supply is so constrained and demand is far, far, far outstripping supply. So I do not have a budget of €450,000. I would just like to point out to Dara O'Brien, if he's listening.
He will be.
So, yeah, that's where I find myself. But not, I'm very conscious there are people in far more challenging situations than I am, either because that they're because of the rent that they're paying, that they're trapped with paying high rent, they can't move home. Their salary, between their salary and paying rent, there's just no prospect of them being able to apply for a mortgage or save that deposit. And then, of course, we know the horrendous statistics around homelessness and around people living in slum-like conditions. So I'm very conscious of my privilege in all of this. But at the same time, I'm somebody who represents a section of society, you know, who's working on a slightly above average income, but not a spectacular income. I'm single. So, you know, single buyers very seldom get a look in housing discourse. We're largely forgotten about. Same with single income households. So all this talk of, you know, a couple on 90,000, does that mean as a single person you have to be on 90,000 to be able to access any of these homes? And I don't know many people on that kind of a salary. I know they exist, but I don't think they're the ones in need of a bit of, you know, of accessible housing, affordable housing. So that's where I find myself.
I think that's like, and again, I know you've spoken about your privilege and the position, but I'm reminded very much, and I'm always reminded of it all the time, of the, and I steal his quotes all the time. So Emmett Kirwan talking about the life delayed, and it very much is that life delayed, put on pause, and the social contract was actually not been fulfilled. When you hear those stories, I am going to go to Mark but Mark, if you don't mind and indulge me, I'm going to just give the quote that you directly from your tweet you put up yesterday that went viral, if that's okay. You said, "I'll never own a home. For a regular single person, it's almost impossible. I earn well enough to pay a huge rent on a small place. How I keep doing that when I'm very old, I don't know. That is the reality facing many. Ideological problems created by a landlord political class." You're not a bad writer, Mark.
Pretty heavy, isn't it?
pretty grim for a bright Thursday evening, but nonetheless.
It is grim. I mean, I come from a kind of a come at it from a different angle. I'm from a very large family, so I'm not going to inherit anything. There's nothing to inherit anyway. So like, I'm one of 10 children. It was like, once you're 18 years of age, you can head off now. And I work in the arts industry, and you know, it's not famous for making tons of money. But like, always I have lived my life paying my rent. My rent here in this little house, it's a one-bedroomed house where I'm able to work as a writer as well. So it's nice and quiet, it's lovely. It's not too far from the center of town. I don't drive, it suits me. But it's, you know, it's coming up to near enough to €2,000 a month. Like savings, you can't save while you're doing that. There's nowhere to move to. Like, I have to be here for my work, basically, both writing and my acting work. I would be happy to spend the rest of my life paying rent if there were proper protections for renters in this world. There aren't. I can be out of my ear with a month's notice, basically. And also, though, rent is constantly going up. It's 4% every year now. It's built into the system. Bang, 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 bang. It keeps going up.
Just going to interrupt the podcast here. Look, we're looking for money again. We have to do this. This is how we survive. And I just want to say, we have great days too, Tony. We do have great days. Rory had a great day about housing. You had a great day on finance. I'm having a good time on Bogus Self-Employment. So we do a lot of other work as well. It's important that we keep this podcast going. It's our direct line to be able to highlight subjects we think are important to the public.
I think that is it in a nutshell. It's like when you see the volume of people engaged, Rory's piece, Rory had one over on me. I said to him, "Rory, you've been writing that since 2013. And he said, "I know. And I was right in 2013 and I'm right today." So yeah,
20 years to be an overnight success, Tony.
Yeah, this is it, though. And this is the reality. But without the tortoise shack, does that happen, Martin? Without that agency, without that platform, without that bit of clout that we have, you know, like, I mean, there are radio stations that would give their hands for the sort of listenership we have. And yet it's not viable.
We can't stick all those ads in like a radio does too, Tony. We have to be careful.
Would you advertise with us if you thought that we were going to be anti-investment and anti-capital, anti-vulture fund? That's where, like, you think all these other, there's radio stations that go from a discussion on banks and then into an advert for B with AIB, you know, sponsored by. So, you know, like, I don't care what you say. The quiet hand of editorial control comes in many forms, and we don't want ads.
There's no editorial control here, Tony. There's no quiet hand.
No, absolutely not. And we shouldn't have it. But we do need you, as our listener, to go to patreon.com/tortoiseshack. There's a range of options there. It's from the price of a cup of coffee up to a couple of quid. And you know what? There's loads of benefits as well. We will be live on Sunday. You get to come along, have a bit of crack. And there's other things going on. But just help us out. Thanks very much. And we will go back to the podcast now and enjoy it.
Hold on before you do that, Tony. It's patreon.com/tortoiseshack.
Rent is constantly going up. It's 4% every year now. It's built in to the system. Bang, 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 bang. It keeps going up. And I suddenly realized that I'm in a position now where I can't retire. I cannot ever stop working. If I become ill, what happens? I do have savings. Yeah, sure. But they won't last very long. And you'll find that you're thrown out on the scrap heap, basically. There'll be nowhere for you to cling on to. I'm also 51, so I kind of go, well, you know, I wondered about whether to buy or not. And, you know, I have an accountant and things like that. And they were like, well, Jesus, I mean, hang on. If this year is good to you, then maybe we'll be able to scrape something together. I actually have money for a deposit. I just have absolutely no chance of getting a mortgage because my earnings are erratic. I'm a single person. And also, at the moment, I'm actually at the end of the period where you will get a mortgage.
You're in that window with it.
Closing fast. But I'm a very optimistic person. I don't despair over this. I'll find a way. But it shouldn't be. It shouldn't be like this.
And it's changed. And both of you have mentioned that the nature of work has also changed. And that's the way the government has planned it to be. But on the back end of that, you have to plan some security into housing, and particularly for people who aren't always going to be married all of their lives, who aren't searching through Tinder for somebody on 92.3 grand so that they can...
I definitely am doing that as well.
I do that.
I think we all do that.
My advice to young people is marry money. There's no doubt about it. But I think there's also... It is... We're treating housing as a commodity, and we're ruining the social contract. We're destroying the city. I think for a city to work as a creative, vibrant place, it has to be a place where people of various incomes can live and live comfortably. For a while, Dublin was like that, just because everybody was broke at the time. Now it isn't that anymore, and it's going to price itself into oblivion.
Yeah, and I just want to, again, we'll come back to that conversation as well, and about the individual circumstances, but there's a really important point you've touched upon in the news, how this hit the zeitgeist and everybody lost their minds because of the estate of family homes in Maynooth that were sold. But no one lost their minds when all the apartments in Dublin were being bought and built as if people didn't live in them. You know, it's like it's okay for them to be. So in other words, Dublin wasn't okay to live in. Commuters, it's different, you know. Mary, when you were looking, I'm assuming you were looking in that was the market that you should be buying into, you know, the 1-2 bedroom apartments type thing, or you know, or a smaller unit, because at 225, I mean, I remember the old, if you remember, it was 317, 500 was the old stamp duty line, but it started at 216, I think it was. So you were in that window. You know, yeah. but like those are the units, surely.
In looking at what's out there, you know, and I think there's a couple of things here. So I think when you're a single buyer, people make assumptions about what you're looking for.
Like I just did.
And that, you know, you're not alone there. And I have very modest expectations, right? But I would prefer to live in a house because having outdoor space is very important for my well-being. And I've learned that, especially over the past year and a half of lockdown. So I do look at apartments, but houses would be my preference. But like a two-bed, you know. And the reason I don't look at one bed as much is I don't necessarily know what the future holds. Maybe if one of my parents might need to come and live with me at one point, or if, you know, to just leave that option open of having a bit more space. Or if living on my own doesn't suit me and I want to have a housemate, you know, there's all sorts of things that, that come into play. But yeah, those kind of smaller units. So all these new builds that are being built, and I was saying this to somebody earlier on about how I felt about new builds. And I was like, well, I don't really consider them because they're not priced. They're not built or priced for me or people like me. They're family homes, and for the most part. And that is absolutely fine because there is a need for family homes and there's a need for people to access housing that is suited to their needs, whatever those needs might be, whether that's a one bed, two bed or a four bed. And they're also they're bigger than I need. I don't need to live in a four bed house and take that away from a family who need it. But they're also not priced for me. Like they're, like you were saying, Tony, they're like wildly out of budget for me. So I'm looking at all secondhand houses. And like you were saying, like any of us who've been watching this have known for years that investors are buying up swathes of property, particularly in the city centre, but also like it happened out here in my hometown. Google have bought a whole rake of apartments and houses out here in Wicklow. So we know it's been happening for years, and we know that the assumption is, well, nobody really wants to live in Dublin. Like it's transient and it's all students and you know, when people coming to work for Google for a year, like there's no, this idea that like Dublin can't and shouldn't be a place where people live. And as Mark said, it's like it's stripping so much joy and vibrancy out of communities. And there are communities from and living in Dublin city centre, let's not forget, who've been there for generations, who were very often forgotten about. But I have seen housing suck so much joy and creativity out of my peers and my friends for so many years, certainly for the last 5 or 6 years, and prior to that. It's forced people out of Dublin. Whatever about leaving Dublin as a choice, as a lifestyle choice, leaving Dublin because you feel like you've no option, and leaving your community, leaving your connections, leaving your family in some cases, that is very, very damaging to people. And it is fracturing our communities so that investors and developers can make a profit. And like, houses do not exist for profit. No, sorry, they do in the ideological world of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael. But they shouldn't. They're being treated as a source of profit and a commodity rather than as a human right and a social need. And that has been, and I know everyone knows this, I'm like very much preaching to the choir here, but like that has been deliberate government policy of successive governments for years, for decades probably at this stage, probably since the 80s. And the stigmatization of state housing, social housing, whatever you want to call it, and the stigmatization of those communities. So this is where we find ourselves, and people like myself and Mark stuck in the middle. But
Mark, both of you made the same point though about how we've seen the commodification of housing. We've seen that absolutely wholesale. We've seen it like I was listening. I know Rory's been everywhere on the radios today and he's playing a blinder talking about it, but it's so funny because I was telling Martin earlier that when he wrote the piece, I kind of said to him, oh, you've been writing that since 2013. And he said,
caught the zeitgeist over the last few days, though. Yeah. Made people go, okay.
And now I get it in some ways. The penny dropped, they can say, oh, there's that. I can see those houses, and now I see what that means. But you also made a really interesting point, Mark, about, actually, Mary, you backed it up. It pulls the creativity out of areas. It absolutely, like, there's no mix of incomes. There's no zones.
What it does is it breaks down communities into building units. Mm. Communities are not building units. They're people who live in the same area. And they become special because they're people. You know what I mean? And if you're constantly telling people that community is important. Keep moving out, keep moving out, keep moving out until there's nothing left. There's nothing of value to, you know, you don't know your neighbors anymore. You don't know, like it's appalling. I had this other thing that keeps happening to me, and it happened to me yesterday with that tweet that I sent out, where people kind of reply to you as if you are a non-productive human being. And I go like, I'm paying more rent than you've ever paid on your mortgage. Like, I have paid my rent always. I've never missed my rent. Like, why am I being looked at as being an unproductive person? You know what I mean?
And it's,
I just happened to be outside of the remit that's in place at the moment.
And I think you're dead right about that. It's seen as, you know, a home is for the heterosexual, 2.4 kids, dog, but it doesn't include anybody else. Everybody else is left out of the picture. Now, you also have to be high earning, 2.4, and both of you is working. You know, what we would call contributors, or what they would call contributors, but there's nothing else. It's that or the rental market, and you're at the whim of a landlord. Do you think we're reaching a tipping point? Because I feel we're reaching a tipping point.
I think there's terrible rage out there at the moment. Like, there is just, people have had enough. And also the housing market, anybody who's trying to buy at the moment, like, I've sort of dabbled and gone into Daft and looked at things. There's terrible places out there. Yeah. Like,
it's
huge.
I mean,
it's terrible places.
There are places that are selling, that are, have an asking price, 250, 260. So that presumably will sell for more than that, that don't have a kitchen. Mm-hmm. That need, I'm not a builder, so I'm like guessing a lot of this stuff, at least 30 grand. Now, I don't mean to spend 30 grand on the kitchen. I mean, that's like, mm-hmm. that's an example of the state they're in, you know, so they might need to be rewired. They might need new floors. They might need a kitchen, a bathroom, like a not like cosmetic upgrading, which estate agents love to say, like a significant amount of work. And they're still priced at that level. I saw a boarded up house in Finglas last week, which apparently is completely trashed. Apparently the back of the house is basically just gone. So all the windows have been knocked in and everything. So no photos of the inside, which is probably an indicator of the state it's in. And chatting to a guy in the local cafe, and he said it was listed for 195 in December and now it's listed for 230.
Jeez.
As a two bed.
A wealth of original features, I think.
The original features. There's one point I want to make, which I think goes to something Mark mentioned earlier about inheritance. Somehow we've got to this point where that window of everything you need to have, who you need to be, what your circumstances need to be able to own a home has got narrower and narrower and narrower. And the emphasis is on you as an individual and your circumstances, not just your income, but your access to capital, your access to wealth. And this assumption that has become baked in to our housing system, that you have access to tens of thousands of euro beyond, like, oh, I got a couple of grand to help me towards my deposit, like significant chunks of money. And that has become baked into the system. And the number of people who've said to me, even though I've been talking about it for years and like have been on my plan, and I'm like, like, I still have a 20 or 30 grand shortfall to be able to get, you know, the kind of home I'm looking for in the kind of area I'm looking for. And they go, would you not just get it from your parents? And I'm like, my parents don't have tens of thousands of euro. And even if they did, that should not be the factor that needs to be in place for me to be able to own a home. Mm-hmm. That, and it has become this assumption, along with everyone making 80 grand, which I'm not sure where that came from, because it's so out of kilter with how most people live and what most people earn. But this assumption of access to capital has become totally baked in. It's been said out loud by politicians numerous times.
And said, but I said a little bit of Taoiseach at one stage when he was Taoiseach.
Yes,
now tarnished.
The bank of mum and dad. Like, how is that? It's not my parents' job to provide, to do that. It is the state's, it is literally the state and the government's job to provide homes for its citizens.
Not
what those circumstances might be, and it's so problematic, and it's creating this huge inequality. And there's a shame. Sorry, I'm on a bit of a rant now. I'll shut up in a minute. There's a shame in, or a perceived shame in being 40 or 50 or whatever it is, and being like, I can't own my own home. And I remember being on a housing protest. I think it was in 2017, and saying to my friend who I was there with, who owned her own home, and I was like, where are the people? Like, where are the hordes? Where are the water charges levels of people? Because housing is crucifying us. It is destroying our communities. It's ruining our mental health. And we are cannonballing towards older person homeless crisis, when people hit retirement. And where are the people? And I was like, it's because there's a perceived shame in coming out and saying, no, you know what? I can't own my own home for whatever reason. Or, yeah, I'm living in, I have to share a room with three other people because that's my only option. And that we have to talk about what's involved. We have to be open about it. And it's hard talking about it. It's so personal, like, in talking about your income and your...
It is. You know, I also think that there's like, one other side to this that has to be part of the solution, which is making it viable to rent for the whole of your life.
Absolutely. Yeah. Security.
I don't want particularly to own property, but I don't want to end up homeless at the age of 74. Do you know what I mean?
Just on the security of tenure piece, because it is critical. It is very, we have some of the weakest tenant protections in the EU. We've seen Focus Ireland, you know, trying to have the Focus Amendment put in. We've seen all of these things where they're trying to give security of tenure. And Mark, you point out quite right. Like, I mean, you cannot literally work into a pine box.
I literally, at this point in my life, there is no other way of me surviving with a roof over my head until the day I die. There's no
and
other
the,
way.
And the pine box would probably be 350 quid a month anyway. I mean, that's, but we've been told over the last decade or so two very great lies. One is that people don't want home ownership. And we've been told that this is what people have opted for. But that's not the truth. We've also been told that people are quite happy to rent. Now, mark aside, I think the vast majority of people would like to rent for a period of time and then would like to move on.
I think for a family with children, I think buying is probably a much better option. Simply, it adds savings for them, blah, blah, blah. For somebody like me, who's fecking around most of the time, I don't have children, I don't have anybody to save for. Like, I don't mind the idea. What I do mind is that you are never the central person to the contract. It is always, you know, you are the person who is the weakest link as far as they're concerned. And you're never protected by the law the same way as the house owner, the homeowner is. Like, and I feel that has got to change. It is possible to do those things on the continent. It is possible. And I think that, you know, renting corporation housing is a great option for people, and it's a great option for families as well, actually.
Of course it is. And we have to move away. I think we talk about the stigma of, I only have to go back two housing ministers to Simon Coveney saying we don't want to build ghettos again. I come from one of those so-called ghettos in Ballymun, and I never refer to it as that. And I, you know, it has everywhere, like everywhere, it says its ups and downs. But a lot of that wasn't due to, you know, it was poverty and how people were treated more than it was building ghettos. And when we look at these things now, but you talk about it, you know, we look at these models and you say, let's look at Vienna, and we have a range of options where you can have an artist beside an accountant, beside a bricklayer, you know, where it's, and the rent is paid on based on your, what you can pay, what you can afford. But we tried recently to have cost rental in Ireland, and they came back and said, well, cost rental, but with a little bit of profit for the old developer as well. But they did do that.
But I mean, the area that I live in is a mixed area here in Dublin, and it's the kind of area I want to live in. I want to, you know, there's corporation flats down the road, there's a few nice big houses on South Circular Road. Where I live, are there's tiny little artisan cottages and all of that. It's a great mixed community. That's where I want to live in. That's what the planning should be all about.
Dublin was the biggest slum in Europe just over 100 years ago. And it was the biggest slum in Europe just over 100 years ago. And it took corporation and council housing to turn Dublin into something else. And we enjoyed this brief period where people owned the city. And we have now flown through gentrification and we're into corporification of the city, and they've just turned it into somewhere where you cannot live.
And when you look at those communities, like, you know, Crumlin, where I lived for several years, Drimna, Rialto, Cabra, Ballyfermot, all those areas that were built as part of the, you know, when
great places
were knocked down, brilliant places to live, and those communities have endured. Mm-hmm. And those houses have endured. They've stood the test of time, and the communities are resilient. It's not necessarily that the communities don't have their problems. Every single community has issues. That's the nature of people and cities. But they have endured, and now they're being stripped away. And I see it in estate agent adverts, which just really, really grinds my gears. And they're talking about a house in Crumlin, and they're saying a stone's throw from Terenure, or within if you want to live in Crumlin, don't live in Crumlin. Exactly. Don't live in Crumlin because you actually want to live in Terenure.
Did the Irish Times guy who does the priced out of
Rathgar try Crumlin? Yeah. Like, and it really, you know, and what that must feel like for
come on in there, Tony, who lives on what is it? Which avenue? Ballymun Avenue.
I live on Ballymun Road, but up the road they changed the name to Glasnevin Avenue.
That's true.
Just that's up there, true. Around 100%. The corner, they changed it, and it just cracks me up when it's like, oh, I know, lads, no one's. And although, you know,
Dublin 6 West.
Yeah, Dublin 6W. We can't, you know, but although I do like the lads from Tala saying, no, it's Dublin 2-4.
But, you know, Mark makes a really good point that, like, home ownership shouldn't be the only option, right? And we're stuck in this old mindset of you rent for a couple of years in your 20s and then you buy your house and you settle down. And that is not everyone's life story, and that is not everyone's first preference or first option. You know, and renting should be...
You throw out ideas like, well, shouldn't rent be index linked or something like that? Or shouldn't it be, you know, and they go like, oh, my, Jesus, Mary and Joseph.
I heard someone.
What are you talking about?
Someone said that the other day. It was on Wednesday. Yeah. So it was only yesterday. And I heard someone say, and the reply from a guy from KPMG was another Marxist. And I just thought to myself, if we go from that to straight to Marxist, like, you know, it's like, oh, come on. Surely we get a raise to the debate above that.
I worry.
Purity of tenure. I mean, like, it's a basic concept. Like, everyone gets all like, but what about landlords and the constitutional protection of property? And I'm like, have you ever been evicted? It happened to me twice. It's not much fun. And, you know, it's happening people all the time. And if you think a landlord wouldn't think twice about throwing you out in your 60s, you've never met a landlord.
Well, Mark, sorry.
Well, no, I was just saying I agree with all of that. That idea that with a month's notice, or even if you're lucky and you've been there a few years, it's a 6 months' notice, you can be told to up sticks, basically. And that is terrifying. It was funny, when I was saying all this on Twitter yesterday, somebody said, why don't you move down to Cavan?
Ugh.
I was like, you know, as a gay man in his 50s, rural Cavan.
Cavan is not the most happening place.
I don't hear speed of a gay disco somewhere in the centre of the city within walking distance. I get nervous.
But there is a flip side to that coin, in that because people have been working from home, there's a lot of people now looking, saying, well, why do I live in a city that's so sterile, so dead? You know, and they're looking at moving outside the city. But, sorry, go ahead, Tony.
No, I just think it's really important that we capture this, because we've spoken to Phil Lawton on this podcast a few times about the great geographer from Trinity, about how, you know, making cities dynamic and livable, and there's talk of a nightmare. I know it's not a nightmare, M-A-Y-O-R, not M-A-R-E. but we need all of these things to make the city, like, the city could be creative. And like, I went to school in Brunner, Brunswick Street in town, and I remember being able to play football on Henry Street, you know, like, so there was families in Ormond Square, there was families in all along the quays and people lived in the communities and they grew up in the communities and they wanted to stay in the communities. But nonetheless, you look at it now and those areas, you know, like, as you've said, are you working in the law courts? Well, maybe rent around there now for a while, you know.
But I think we do have a night city, Tony, and I think that's part of the problem. And our night city is a city of tents. it's a city of people sleeping in sleeping bags.
Yeah.
That is our night city. And before you can make the city livable, you first must address that problem.
For sure. I mean, for me, it's just like there is no reason for homelessness.
No.
Yeah.
That's as simple as that. And there is no excuse for it. Like, I mean, and actually more, and this is, I always say this, so just listeners, you'd be annoyed with me, but remember, in the program for government, there is no plan to end homelessness. Just remember that. Not one of the parties put in a plan to end homelessness. There's a lack of ambition for you in its nutshell. It should be one of the first things on the top of the page.
And this is, we are three fairly, I wouldn't say radicals, but, you know, three normal people and one Tony.
One red fella.
And we're looking at this from a very particular perspective. And if we can see it's wrong and we can see it doesn't work, you have to think of people who simply will never have any chance of paying $2,000 rent or getting a mortgage. How bad is the despair from that perspective?
It was an interesting one. When I was 18 or wherever, I went to London for the first time, and it was the height of Thatcherism at the time. It was 1988, and I just couldn't believe the homelessness that I saw in London. I mean, even Mother Teresa gave Thatcher a dressing down for it. And it seems like the philosophy, which is what is predicated on cruelty and unnecessary cruelty and the allowing of suffering like that.
I was there at the same time.
It's the person's fault that, like, if you are homeless, it's your fault somehow, rather than that you are at the sharp end of a system that has been created in a particular way, and that, like, successive governments have known.
Well, I mean, regardless of whether it's somebody's fault that they made life choices, blah, blah, unnecessary suffering is not what we as a society should allow. It's people will end up homeless. But to suffer that is too much for us as a society to agree to. So we just got to stop it, you know. I mean, solutions that there, the Finnish solution that's there. And
Orla Hegarty pointed out that a house, the same house that will be 450,000 in the more affluent areas of Dublin, can be built, the exact same house can be built for about 180, 190 on another part of the island. So this is, it's basically something that can be done. There's no rocket science to this. Tony quotes how much land there is between the canals.
And we know, look, we 44,000 units can be delivered. And I keep saying units, and I hate to say it, they're homes. You know what I mean? I got to be less less financially minded, but nonetheless, this is, we have the scope there. But to go back to Mark's point about that suffering and how we allow it, that is the cruelty in the system. It is the life delayed for people who are finding that this is it's the fear of what happens when you age. It's the fear of not being able to have, you know, if I get that notice to quit, what do I do? If I get that letter that says, you know, that, you know, oh, he's renovating the place, or the rent is, and as you said, Mark, they've built in 4% of a guaranteed return, which is why the investors are so happy. You know, they're queuing up around the block. They're boasting about it. Like they boasted and said, Ireland is the gift that keeps on giving. And then when you take it back then to, on the other side, go to right to the guy Slee, who's in the tent, and obviously, and know how difficult that is. There is a cruelty there, because we know we have more vacant properties than we need. Rents are artificially high, and that is the reality. Like, I mean, we just have this really, really screwed up system. Last thing, Mary, though, I suppose, if I could just ask you, if you don't mind, given everything you've said, do you feel there are solutions that you've seen or ideas that you've heard that maybe, you know, yeah, that sounds good to me. That's something I think that I could get behind.
Tear it all down and start again, I think.
Wouldn't start from here.
I think it has to be looked at. Like, there's a total lack of imagination it's just the same tired old, investor-focused scheme after scheme after scheme. There's no imagination, except for with the likes of Ona Brin, Cian O'Callaghan, in the political side, and then the likes of Rory and Orla, who, you know, we're talking about it more from the academic or activist side. I think it has to be looked at as a whole system. Home ownership can't be looked at in isolation, it has to be looked at alongside renting. Because so long as renting is seen as a profitable venture, and so long as people can be evicted so easily, and people don't have any security, and so, as long as rents can continually just keep going up, which, I mean, nobody's salary automatically goes up by 4% every year.
It's so, not like, where? Tied to salary increase. It has never been tied to salary increase.
It's absolutely bonkers. And then you could keep doing that and they could still evict you with a month's notice or 6 months' notice, whatever it is. So I think control on rents, security of tenure, move away from this 12-month to 12-month tenancy nonsense. Minimum 3 to 5 years as a standard tenancy. And just get a handle on the fucking investors. Like, that to me, and again, it's
that can be done. That can be done in a few hours with the stroke of a pen.
So easily. And it's, you know, all of this, like, oh, we're so surprised this has happened. Like, this has been a deliberate policy for successive governments for years, and these investors have been courted, and now they've just been caught because it's a nice family estate of family homes and Manutes. So control that, cap it at 10 or 20% of whatever development if they won't get rid of them altogether, and flip the ratio that, like, if a new building, a new unit, whatever you want to call it, is built, its first priority has to be somebody's home. They have to sort out HAP. I mean, HAP is just shoveling money into investors' pockets. Like, it just, when I think about HAP, I just get into such a rage, and how awful that must feel for people stuck in that system, who it's not serving them in any way. Look at the Ocoolon model of building homes, build homes that are priced at Ocoolon, something I could get behind, but obviously on a scale far larger than
and you's ready to scale up
if we asked the question, and
here's the funny thing, they will tell you that he can't scale up because he doesn't have the staff, and you will tell you give me the land and watch the staff take my hand off, because if you're going to pay the wages, they're going to come and work for you.
Houses have to be homes have to be priced at a level in accordance with average incomes. Well, if that's not the case, they're not affordable.
I'll go one further. Homes should be priced on the cost of delivery. So if you can build it for 180,000 and he can sell it for 195,000, and that 15 grand helps him build out the next site, and he does it not for profit, well, then let them off and let them have at it. Mark, have you anything to add to that extensive list?
Well, I think there has to be. I do think the whole system has to be rethunk. That's a word now, because it's failing on all sorts of levels, and there are squeezes happening. Families are getting squeezed. There's homelessness at one end. There are pockets of people like myself, or, you know, who's getting squeezed here. And there are a lot of people who are facing into the rental cliff where they suddenly get too old to keep paying rent. And there's going to be a lot of older homeless people if it's not looked at. And I wonder, is there a need for the saying of basic things like housing is a right? People have a constitution, you know, if it means changing the constitution, but people have a constitutional right to housing. End of. And from there, all government policy has got to align with that. I wonder whether it needs a citizens' assembly that deals only with housing and the housing crisis. I don't know whether that is a way for politicians who refuse point blank to think about any of these things to think about them.
I will make that point, because someone made it really well to us previously, that if you get politicians, let's just say of a neoliberal ilk who believe in that, and they don't want, but they'd like hands off on this, they have to do something about it. Sometimes the vehicle of the Citizens Assembly gives them an out to say, well, actually, you know, we were okay with this developer-led model, but it turns out, and we have to, and there's now, we'd rather they were elected to do the bloody jobs that they did the job they were bloody well elected to do. But there are certain people who in that cohort, and when you see Fine Gael members of the parliamentary party going mad last night at the, because they live tweet these things. Why don't they just put them online now? We could all just watch it. But someone was going mad because people from a Fine Gael household were liking tweets by Eoin Ó Briain. You know things have gotten very it's squeaky bum time in the lads who you know. Look, anyway, Martin, sorry, I come across you.
Yeah, no, I think too there used to be a safety net on housing, and by turning to the private market, what they've done is take away any kind of safety net that was there. Yeah. And there is no greater motivation to pay more rent than to see tents along the canals. There is no greater motivation to pay the rent rises. And I don't think any of that's by accident.
Yeah. That's pretty grim. Can I just pick up on one last thing that Mark said earlier? And I was following your Twitter exchange, Mark, when somebody suggested you move to Cavan. And whenever I put anything online about it, or when like I featured in an article in the journal about a month ago, and yeah, people roll in with move to Leitrim or move to Donegal or move to Wexford, all of which are fine places. And this is nothing against those places, but it totally undermines the value of community and the value of connection.
Yeah.
And moving somewhere on your own, especially as a single person, moving, upping sticks and moving on your own. I'm a very social person. I wouldn't have an issue making friends. But I'm nearly 41. I have a community here that I want to stay part of. And I want to know I am near that community if I get sick, or if something happens, I want to know I have people around me. Again, the last year has shown how important all of that stuff is. If we didn't know before. So this idea of like, well, should just get over yourself and go and move like miles away from.
Move down to Cavan for me was like I lived in County Clare. You know, I was born in there. I spent 17 years dreaming of the city. As a gay, it was very important for me to come to the city.
Yeah.
But I've also
I love that as a gay.
As a gay, the city is important to me. But I also love Dublin. I absolutely love it. It's central to my creative work. I want to keep writing about it. I want to keep looking at it. I want to keep exploring it. I want to live here.
And if we all leave, if that's the solution, who's left? Who's in the city? Like a friend of mine.
Being a creative city. I mean, it's stopping being a creative city.
Yeah. Like a friend of mine is a speech therapist and single. So she hasn't a hope of I think the maximum mortgage she would get is something like 160,000, which is like literally nothing in Dublin. Mm-hmm. So she's like, okay, right, long term, I'm just going to have to leave. So then that's her and her skills gone from the city. It's not like there's a whole heap of speech therapists if anyone's looked at the waiting list on the HSE. So teachers, childcare workers, baristas, service industry workers, community workers,
key workers.
Workers.
We know who key workers are now. You know, we were all the key workers were apparently the guys that just lived, that were in the big apartments and went across the IFSC. That's not the case.
That's not who holds the community together, who drives the city. And it's basically just telling all of those people, no, you can't live here. You can stay here. We'll take your rent off you for, you know, but then when we're done with you, sorry. Like it's a very cruel, again, the cruelty that's baked into the system on so many levels. Message for people. And how close, I saw someone tweeting about this again, that their experience of becoming homeless and the steps that happened for them to get there, and they're like, so many people are just one life circumstance away from homelessness.
There's also this thing, you know, was said to me on Twitter yesterday, which is like, you've made all these choices, it's your fault that you're doing, and I go, it's actually it's the dysfunction of the system.
Mary and Mark, I think that's a perfect place to leave it. I mean, the dysfunction of the system is a perfect place to leave it. Thank you very much for coming on and showing that people are more than economic units, and that their housing needs have to address them as more than economic units.
Housing is a human right, Martin.
It sure is.
It absolutely is. Thanks for listening, folks. We have the Ombudsman for Children, Niall Muldoon, joining us tomorrow. So we'll be back with more. As you know, we keep this coming. Thanks for the support, and we will talk to you all very soon.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber Podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.